It's been a long week. We looked back at the 20th anniversary of the Summer Olympics in Atlanta. We analyzed the political effect of there being fewer white Christians in the U.S. these days, at least proportionally. And we got several sneak peeks at the Macon Film Festival. So, as we do every Friday, we've gathered a group of smart people to help us kick back, unwind, and reflect on the week's events. It's time for the Break Room.
Alita hopes to join the Sisters of Life convent on the Upper West Side in September. But there's a problem. They told her she has to pay off all of her student debt.
Fired for displaying what some say is a symbol of hate, a cop in hot water tonight, this time for a flag controversy that just cost her her job.
Leslie Jones was trending. By 6:38 p.m., Jones tweeted, "Twitter, I understand you got free speech. I get it. But there has to be some guidelines."
And we are spread out all over the state today. Joining us in the break room from Atlanta are Hector Fernandez. He's a professor in the Department of World Languages and Cultures at Georgia State University. Hi, Hector.
Morning.
With you is LGBT educator and activist Robbie Medwed. Hey, Robbie.
Good morning. How are you?
Lovely. In our Savannah studio, we are joined again by Amy Condon. She's an editor with Savannah Magazine. Hello, Amy.
Hi. How are you this morning?
I'm good. Maybe I'm not having as good a time as you are. It sounds like things are funny in Savannah.
Yeah.
With me in Macon is Charles Richardson, editorial page editor for the Telegraph of Macon. Hello, Charles.
Good morning, everybody.
So let's start the break room off with a spiritual note. A New York woman wants to be a nun, but the church says that she can't join a convent until she pays off her student loans. Alita Taylor got a job as a costume designer on Broadway after graduating from college with a fashion degree, but she told CBS New York that she had a different calling.
I had all these desires. I wanted to have a career. I wanted to have a family and marriage, but your heart begins to shift.
Alita says that she planned to pay off her student loans over the next decade, but in order to get into the church, she had to begin soliciting donations through a GoFundMe page in order to meet her goal and get them paid off. So she's finally going to be taking her vows of poverty, chastity, and obedience in September, though arguably she already made two of those vows already when she signed her loan documents. Ba-doom! Thank you. Thank you. I was here all week.
Yeah.
What do you think of the convent's policy that you can't be a nun if you are in the hole? Robbie, you want to start off?
Yeah. So I'm Jewish. I don't really understand how the church works, but there's just something a little bit absurd about all of this. I would figure that, you know, they want more people helping out. Why wouldn't they lend a little bit of a hand? And she can work it off as a nun, volunteer other places and pay that back somehow.
Yeah, but that's the problem, right, Hector? Is that it's like if you're a nun, you're not supposed to be making money with which to pay off
exactly
your loans. And what, is the church going to absorb your debt?
Yeah, the nuns have it right. I mean, you shouldn't embark on some expensive endeavor if you haven't taken care of certain financial responsibilities. You know, as a nun, she can't work outside the convent, and the convent is not going to provide any stipend. So how the blazes is she going to cover it? The debt.
So I've seen Sister Act, and they put on a great concert to raise money. I don't know why she can't just do the same
thing. Movies. That's the movies.
Amy, is this just?
Well, one thing I couldn't figure is if the loans were federal and she's working for a nonprofit, which basically she would be, aren't they forgiven after 10 years? But if they're bank loans, then she has the responsibility to pay them back. So, I mean, it's like truly given to Caesar what is Caesar's in terms of their stance. But and I'm paying off my school loans right now, so I completely empathize with her.
Right there with
it's
you.
It's painful. It is so painful every month when that money goes right out of the bank account.
Charles is like, is this a thing where we're just seeing, and this is just, you know, student loan debt being kind of a ubiquitous condition among people these days, is that, this is just another example of it affecting every facet of life, right?
Well, I'm just wondering, one day she wants to have a career and have kids and get married, and next she wants to be a nun? I mean,
when
there
the
may
good
be
Lord
issues
calls,
here.
The good Lord yeah. calls.
I mean, it's just, wow, that's talking about a whole different lifestyle.
She went to a FIT, most likely.
Yeah.
So this is a very fashionable nun.
she'll make her own habit. Yeah.
Yeah, but she can make it, but it's going to look the same.
I guess that is the essence of it, isn't it?
So I think the convent may see some other things in her that we're not privy to. Making sure that she is very committed to what she's going to try to do, because 10 years down the road, you know, she might say, oh, really, that fashion thing was really what I wanted to do after
all. Yeah. Well, we shall see. But for those of us who are still paying off our student loans, the next story is of particular interest to us and maybe gets under our skin. The Chronicle of Higher Education, they rank salaries of the leaders of the nation's public colleges and universities, the private ones too. Near the top of the list for public school leader salaries is Georgia State University President Mark Becker. He makes more than $1 million a year in total compensation. That is the fifth highest salary for a public college president in the nation. Meanwhile, you got Georgia Tech President Bud Peterson making the 12th highest base pay in the country at more than $676,000. Again, that's for public schools. The top private school salaries are like 3 to 4 times that. So, Hector, let's go ahead and make you really uncomfortable and put you on the spot. What do you think about your boss making that much money?
Hector, be careful. Danger. Well, danger.
I'm not crazy about it, but I'm going to give you some context. I mean, President
you
Becker.
You have tenure, right?
Yeah, I'm tenured.
All right.
I'm full professors.
Good for you.
But that doesn't give me a free pass. Well, in any case, he was brought in from the University of South Carolina, where he was really instrumental in takeover of Palmetto College into South Carolina. And he just did the same thing in Georgia, taking over Perimeter College and transforming Georgia State into the largest university in the state. So that must have something to do with that. The problem with this is people read this and they imagine people at Georgia State are rolling in money. And
right.
And I'll tell you, the administrative personnel may be rolling in money. The faculty are not. I mean, a bunch of us, we had a race this year, including myself. And it was basically because our salaries were way below the national average. And I would love to think that the university must have some sort of semblance of, social justice. And I don't see much social justice in acute salary disparity.
The argument against university presidents making seven figures is kind of obvious. But before we move on, I just want to ask, does anybody want to try to defend this level of compensation? Anybody?
Well, I would only make this point. The office of president or the title of president may be somewhat of a misnomer. They should really be called professional fundraisers.
Yes,
because that's what they do. They don't have much of a hand in running the universities. They leave that to other people. But they provide a vision, and they go out and get the money to fund that vision. So I guess you could say this is more of a commission.
That's right. Wow. I hadn't thought
That's
of it that way.
That's an interesting take.
Yeah. Okay, let's go ahead and move on. Let's see. Oh, one more higher ed topic before we leave this
There's
entirely.
There's a theme here.
Yes, there is absolutely a theme, and it's even more linked than people realize. Some students are facing greater financial challenges than just the loan payments that we were talking about before. Take, for example, a guy by the name of Fred Barley, 19-year-old student at Gordon State College in Barnesville, Georgia. He was homeless and up until recently lived in a tent outside of campus. Fred was waiting for the dorms to open next month. So he figured he'd just pitch a tent on the quad or something. He told WSB-TV that police, he told them what the police said to him when he was outside his tent after they got a trespassing complaint about him. Let's listen.
Hello, is anybody in there? And I'm like, yeah. I was nervous to answer, but I was like, yeah. And he's like, come up with your hands where we can see him. So I zip open the tent and I'm just showing my hands like I'm good.
Now, Fred is doing much better. Local police covered a couple of nights in a motel for him, and the college eventually let him into the dorms early. He also got a job. He has received tens of thousands of dollars in donations. Pretty happy ending, it seems, for Fred. But there are thousands of college students who end up homeless and are not lucky enough to also end up on television. What's one of the things that the country could do to prevent this from happening to other students, Amy?
Well, going back to the previous question about
yeah.
Perhaps the fundraising should be directed not to padding a president's or a development person's salary and actually should go toward the students.
You got to spend money to make money, though, right, Charles?
Well, that's exactly right. But to the question at hand, one way you stop a homeless college student is that you stop a homeless high school student.
Wow.
I know of cases right here in middle Georgia area where the school has personnel to watch out for students that are homeless right here. And I'm pretty sure in the other communities where you're broadcasting from, the very same thing applies. Yeah. So to hear that there are college students that are homeless doesn't surprise me one bit.
All right. Let's go ahead and move on. A police officer in Roswell, Georgia, was fired last week. His dismissal may have been connected to the fact that he was flying a Confederate flag at his home. There are lots of professionals, like some kinds of journalists, who are barred from expressing strong opinions, even in their off hours. Question at hand is, should cops be banned from doing potentially offensive things when they're off the clock? Robbie, do you want to take this one first?
Yeah, I would say we're trying to get cops into communities so that they can actually learn about them, get to know them, live there, and be a part of them. And if you're putting something out on your front lawn that has such a strong, strong meaning to it, it's definitely going to make that job a lot harder. It's not like the flag was inside the house. It's outside. That's a really public statement to make. And it really makes people probably feel really unsafe and that they can't trust the police when they need to go to them. And we've seen that across the country, that that's not where we need to be going right now.
Amy, you're the editor of Savannah Magazine. You have reporters who I'm sure you expect a certain degree of professional decorum from them, even when they're not working for you. Do you think that we should treat cops similarly?
I think if you take an oath as part of your job to serve and protect all and to uphold the laws of a community or a nation, you are and should be held to a higher standard. So when that police car is sitting outside of that house with that flag, you are making a statement not just about yourself, but of your community.
But then again, oh, sorry, go ahead.
Well, and I mean, we don't know what the chief found out when speaking to that person. And clearly in that article, the chief had a change of heart also by going out into the community and meeting people and sort of breaking open their own idea, his or her own ideas. So by confronting it, which should have happened, they may have learned more about, you know, what that particular officer's point of view was. And that may have led to it. We really don't know what transpired. Truly,
no, certainly
and
we do
don't
not know
if this is, and we don't really know if this is a causal relationship here.
But we can at least explore the idea in the abstract, Hector. And, you know, cops in a lot of communities make shockingly little money. Are they not entitled to just go home when they go home?
Well, on a general basis, what you do on your spare time is your business. But if you're a public figure and or you're using government-issued vehicles or facilities, that rule does not apply. So, I mean, whatever, you know, if he had the police car right in front of his home, that's not correct.
Charles?
Well, law enforcement officers are on duty 24 hours a day. They're on call all the time. That's why he had the police car. If the police car hadn't been in the driveway, I could have said fly it as long as you want because that's your private property. I don't take any offense at that. But once that police car is in that driveway or in front of that house, he is representing the Roswell Police Department.
Exactly.
And then he's got to represent.
Yeah.
Yep. You know, you or I, Adam, people know us. They know you, that you work at Mercer University, GPB. They know me. I work at the Telegraph.
Oh, they sure do.
And
you're held to a higher standard.
Right. You got to be on all the time.
Yep. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. That's the reality, especially with social media. And that will lead us to our next topic. But let me remind listeners that you are listening to The Break Room on Second Thought. And our Break Room contestants this week are Amy Condon with Savannah Magazine, Robbie Medwed, LGBT educator and activist in Atlanta, Hector Fernandez, he teaches at Georgia State, Charles Richardson, editorial page editor for The Telegraph here in Macon, where I physically am at the moment. And speaking of offensive behavior that can spill over onto the internet, Twitter has taken the very unusual move of banning one of its most prominent users for life. Milo Yiannopoulos is the technology editor with the conservative website Breitbart.com. The social media company Twitter, they made this move after Yiannopoulos was tweeting or at least sort of allegedly marshaling some tweets, offensive tweets directed at comedian Leslie Jones, who stars in the new Ghostbusters film. In fact, Jones was bombarded with offensive tweets after the film's release and after Yiannopoulos posted a really critical review of the movie on Breitbart. Let's listen
Jones was called the N-word, a big-lipped coon, an orangutan. Monday morning, 9:12 a.m., Jones spoke out publicly. She tweeted that some people here are disgusting and, quote, I'm blocking your filthy ass. Then she began retweeting attacks, posting as often as every minute. At 12:45 p.m., she tweeted, okay, I've been called apes and even got a pic with semen on my face.
Yikes. That's a report from NPR's Ari Shahani, by the way. NPR says that Yiannopoulos' Twitter account itself, his own Twitter account, did not contain any of these most loathsome attacks, but he used two other platforms, 4chan and Reddit, to assault Jones. Twitter reps say that the site will be more proactive in the future about banning people who engage in targeted harassment and abuse like the kind that Jones was subject to. Robbie, I'm going to go to you. You know, one of the things that we haven't mentioned about Yiannopoulos is that he's gay.
Yep.
And that's not just like a side part of his persona.
It's not.
That's big. That's his big thing. He's like the conservative gay guy, or he's the gay guy who is pushing back on political correctness. What do you make?
He is. And he's also, I think we should just say from the flat out beginning that he's just a disgusting human being. There's nothing positive about this person whatsoever. And the only thing that upsets me about this story is that Twitter isn't being a little bit more proactive in hate speech from all of their angles. But I have absolutely no sympathy for him whatsoever, not even a little bit.
So let me tell you guys something. So like an article that I wrote in Slate last week got picked up in the kind of conservative hate sphere in the last few days, and the site Newsbusters, which has gone after me before, went after me again, and they did their whole thing on me, and so like I have been getting, you know, a steady stream of internet hate the last several days. And I've been kind of engaging because I kind of I just enjoy giving as good as I get, mostly because I think these people aren't expecting it. They're expecting you to just kind of sit there and take it. But because, you know, I'm an academic fat cat now and I don't have to answer to an editor anywhere. Like, you know, I just love to give it back to these people. All right. But like, you know, Amy, maybe that doesn't look so good on a journalist. Maybe I should just... Whether you're a journalist or you're an actor like Jones, like if you're someone who has put yourself out as a public figure and put yourself up for scrutiny, should we just sit back and take it?
I don't know that you should sit back and take it. I don't have a problem with the engagement. I think, you know, dialogue is one thing. And being able to have a dialogue with your readers or even people who completely disagree with you and be able to have a dialogue, that's one thing. And I think that's super helpful as a journalist. And I think it's been important. That's one thing social media has done that's really important for sort of breaking down the barrier between people who report the news or shape opinion and the people who read them or read them and get angry. But... the thing about harassment, that's completely different.
I see.
And I think there's a big difference between the ad hominem attacks that are not meant to engage but to diminish. We need to be mindful of those. And I'm not sure I have an answer or even a way of dealing with it, but I don't know that I applaud that you have like the spirit to fight it and get back in it
My wife would rather I didn't. Charles, let me ask you a question. So, I mean, you deal with this at the paper. Mm-hmm. It's like, how do you draw the line between what is spirited criticism and what is harassment?
Oh, I have no problem with criticism or engaging in a dialogue with a reader that may dislike what I've written or have a different point of view. But I treat them with courtesy. And I expect to be treated with courtesy. Once it starts going into name calling or whatever, the conversation is over as far as I'm concerned. I stop
exactly.
responding. Because one, I've got better use of my time. And there's no reason to respond to people that just want to call names. It's just like my first rule of thumb is rule number one, he who argues with a fool is a fool.
Well, the fools who've been arguing with me on the internet have dubbed me a word terrorist, which I actually kind of like.
That's true. You should put that in your Twitter
bio.
Word
terrorist?
I think that might be happening. But let's go ahead and try to squeeze in one or two more topics. As everyone has undoubtedly heard by now, Melania Trump's Republican National Convention speech was strikingly similar to Michelle Obama's convention speech given 8 years earlier. Here is a mashup of both.
Your word is your bond, that you do what you say you're going to do, that you treat people with dignity and respect.
That your word is your bond, and you do what you say and keep your promise. That you treat people with respect.
Now, so again, this story is just so amazing. But like, you know, more recently, what's happened is that the speechwriter who committed this little sin here the fall person, you know, has come forward and accepted responsibility for that. But that was like 48 hours after you had the Trump campaign insisting, no, this is not plagiarism. This is just two people expressing similar ideas using common words. Hector Fernandez at Georgia State, as a college professor, did that argument ever hold any weight for you?
Nah, not at all. I just love Laura Benanti. I mean, I would rather have her as Melania Trump. You know, this makes no sense at all. I mean, well, I doubt this woman will be fired, first of all, because she's written books for Trump. She's a ghostwriter for Trump, right? Mm. So it just shows that the Trump campaign is unorganized. And it lacks imagination. I mean, in the end, it's just hype and words. But that's precisely what makes Trump so dangerous, right? Because a lot of people are falling for hype and words and the politics of fear, I might add.
But he fires people for a living, so I'm really surprised he let that go.
Guess what? November come, he will be fired.
Well, that's exactly what's sort of interesting about this story is that at the very least, what this represents is organizational incompetence. A professional speechwriting staff should not let through copy like that. And the entire sort of premise of Trump's campaign, aside from all of one of the premises for Trump's campaign is that he's a great manager.
He doesn't have government experience,
but like he says, I'm going to hire the smartest guys. He's apparently not hiring the smartest guys. Or maybe he is, Robbie. Is this all just an intentional distraction? Maybe this was like a plant to keep the media from covering things that actually matter.
I mean, I would be hard pressed to think that they're that smart to do this. But I will say, you know, this woman actually, she wrote on Trump Organization letterhead, not campaign letterhead. There's no record of her getting paid by the campaign, which means she actually was never hired by that, which means now that the Trump Organization is illegally contributing to the campaign, there's a whole level of other stuff going on that just speaks to a clear idea that nobody has any idea what's going on. And I'm not sure that anyone really in the country at this point really has any idea what's going on in reality with
Trump. Not even Trump.
Not any of us. We've gone into some fantasy, scary, scary fantasy world with him and everything that's going on here.
Well, one upside is that because this election is so bananas, public radio ratings have been going through the roof the last couple of months. And for that, I thank Mr. Trump. But we're out of time for the break room today. Thanks to all my guests, Georgia State University Professor Hector Fernandez, LGBT educator and Atlanta activist Robbie Medwed, Savannah Magazine editor Amy Condon, and Telegraph of Macon editorial page editor Charles Richardson. Everybody have a great weekend.
Thanks very much.
Same thing.
All right. Great weekend.
And that is it for today's show, but we want to hear from you, dear listener. We talked earlier about banning users on social media for what they say, especially if what they say is particularly offensive or insulting. Is that a violation of free speech? What is the line between harassment and criticism? Reach us through facebook.com/onsecondthoughtradio. Tweet us at OSTTalk. You could leave a message. We do listen to them. Our number is at 404-500-9457, 404-500-9457. That's On Second Thought from GPB News. I'm Adam Ragusea. Been loving being with you this weekend. Celeste is back at you on Monday. Have a great weekend.